Okay, I just have to make a quick announcement. Say who you are and what your subject is. Is it on the poster?
Yes, it's on the poster.
It is indeed, yes.
Okay.
It's on your list, isn't it?
Let's have a look. Yeah. Okay. Torreway, Northwest London. Chof Ches Ior. Mem Gimel Le'oime. The 5th of June. Rabbi Emmanuel Pat Kashlita. Four Eternal Lessons. Rus taught us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me this morning. What I thought of talking about today was four important messages, four meaningful messages that we find in Megillah Sos. By the Yakis, there is that minig that you only get to eat the cheesecake if you finish counting the Omer. Once you see that the cheesecakes are being prepared at home, you know it's time to start thinking about Megillah Sos a little bit and having some thoughts about it. So I've picked four Divrei Torah, which I feel are very meaningful, important, and they happen to be all in the first Perek. And let's see what we can make out of this. The first Divrei Torah is really an amazing thought and something really with a lot of impact. Is the Divrei Torah, which is based on the Rashi at the beginning of the Megillah. We find that at the very beginning of the Megillah, we find Vibim Shvoit Ashoftim Veirov Baoretz Veilech Ish Beis Lochem Yehuda Logu Bisteimoyov Hu Veishtoy Ushnei Vonov Veshemo Ish Elimelech Veshem Ishtoy Nomi. The Megillah tells us about Elimelech that he is married to Nomi Veshem Shnei Vonov Machlon Vekilyon. He's got two sons, Machlon Vekilyon, Ephrosim. They are from Shevet Ephraim. They are from Veirchosh Veshevet. They go to stay Moyov, Yushom. And Rashi tells us the background to that. Famously, from the Midrashim, that Oshe Godel Hoyom, he was a very wealthy man. Panas Ador, in fact, he was the most influential, philanthropic, very important, and financially very, very powerful man. He was also a tremendous Talmid Chochem and a great Mashpia of the generation. He left Eretz Yisrael, Lechotz Loretz, to live. Because he was a bit stingy. He was a bit stingy with regards to the aniim. Rashi is telling us a medrash that he found it very difficult to support all the aniim that were due to the famine that started in Eretz Yisrael. He was getting very, it was financially difficult for him and draining him and straining. And he found it very difficult to support everybody. Therefore, what he did is that he found it very difficult. Eventually, he packed his bags and he left. He went to stay Moyav. Now, what is really fascinating about this, is what happened actually after that. What happened is that later on, as he moved to from Eretz Yisrael, he moved to stay Moyav. What happened was that he, as Rashi tells us, He loses his wealth. Eventually, loses his machlan and kilyon die, and his everything, and he loses his own life, and there's nothing left of him. Now, what is really incredible, if we think about this, is that this was a osher godly. He was the panas of the generation, and he's trying to save himself from the financial drain of the aniyim that came ledoichkoi. So many people wanted to be supported by him. He felt, I can't support all that. I can't support all those people around me. I don't have the financial means to help them. And in turn, what happened, because of that, he was stingy, and because of that, he moved to stay Moyov. Now, in reality, what happened was, as soon as he got to stay Moyov, he lost everything. He lost first his wealth, eventually lost his own life. Which that seems to be teaching us an incredibly important insight. That he thought that really he was the one that was supporting people, around him. But the reality was exactly the opposite. As soon as he gets to stay Moyov, he loses all his wealth and eventually loses his own life as well. Because who was really supporting whom? It wasn't really he that was supporting the Aniyim around him, but in reality it was his schut, the schut that he had of supporting people around him that kept him alive. And as soon as he didn't have that schut of supporting others around him, that's when he lost his financial standing, he lost everything. This reminds us of an incredible, this is the last story that Dayan Lopkin, Zichron Livracha, about us in Edgware. The last time that Dayan Lopkin spoke in public was when he, by the Kollel dinner, some years ago. And he relates that incredible story, it's an amazing story, of Reb Lezer Golden, Zichron Livracha, that when he was a young bacher, and he there was a shidduch was suggested, and eventually got married, he got married to a very wealthy family. And Reb Lezer Golden managed to become the Tel Zerov Yeshiva, one of the outstanding Gedolim. And what happened was that he was initially, because he was such a choshva Talmid Chacham and a choshva younger man, his father-in-law supported him financially, and he lived in fact by his shver, and he lived there for a number of years, and he was sitting and learning, and due to his chochma and his Torah that he had, he was approached after short years. He was approached to take a shtela, a small shtela in a nearby place. And the Blazer Gordon said, "Listen, it's not up to me to make that decision. I'd love to sit and learn, to continue sitting and learning. However, it's not my own money. It's not my own decision. I've got to ask my in-laws, because they are the ones that are supporting me. I'm living by my in-laws." And he asked, decent enough to ask. And his parents-in-law said, no, you know, you're sitting and learning. It's our pleasure. It's our honor. It's our privilege to support you. And please stay as long as you can. Stay here and sit and learn." And indeed he did. And he carried on another couple of years. And he was approached by a slightly larger community nearby. And then he said, "Listen, it's not my decision. I don't know if I can or I can't. I'd love to sit and learn a bit longer, but I don't know if I can." And he approached his in-laws. And he again, his shver said, no, you know, if you're able to sit and learn, and I want to support you, I want to look after you." And Kachav, he didn't take that shtel. He carried on like this for a number of, because of his chochma, and he was a tremendous koyach. So he decided to, you know, he wants to stay and learn. But a few shtelas were approached. Eventually, after quite a few years, he was approached by Tells no less. Tells, which was the most prominent and prestigious shtele that was around, and not only to be the Rav of Tells, but to be the Shiva of Tells, a shtele that was indeed one of the most prominent positions. And he was approached at that point. He said, "Listen, I don't know. I'm going to ask my in-laws." And here again, he asked his shver, and his shver didn't know, because that was the spitz, the Bidol Shiva in Tells. So he discussed it with his wife. And his wife said, "You know, maybe time has come. The family had grown. There's more children. And it was a bit more difficult to support all that." And he shred and said, "You know what? Perhaps time has come." In discussion with his wife. And he did say to himself at one point, that he was thinking to himself, "You know, don't know who supports whom. Because it's an honor to have him sitting and learning by us. On the other hand, you know, it's easy financially, you know, after all those years, perhaps time had come." But he had agreed, and he passed on the message to Blazer Golden. "Yeah, you know, perhaps time has come." And he accepted the shtela. So Blazer Golden accepted the shtela, and he went off telling those that committee that offered him the job that yes, he's happy to take the job. And indeed, shortly after that, he packed his bags and he was about to leave. And the incredible thing about it is that the very day that the Blazer Golden left, together with his wife and children, that very day, took the horse and wagon, and he moved, and he traveled towards Tells. That very day, he got a message. From his parents-in-law's house that his father-in-law had passed away, was nifta. That very day that he left towards Tells, and indeed he was right in therefore thinking to himself, you know, who knows who supports whom. He had thought that he was supporting his son-in-law, but in reality it was a schus of supporting the Torah that ultimately, that was his schus kium, and the second that stopped, he had no schus kium anymore. So who supports whom indeed? And this story is a particularly important story, considering the fact it was the last story that Dan Lopin said in public by the Kollel dinner. Now, this is perhaps the message that we see from Elimelech. Another, moving on to the second thought, the second powerful and meaningful message that we find in Megillah, is perhaps from Nomi. It's a very I find we can see so much in this. It's teaching us. We find in Pasuk Hey, we find that after as soon as they moved to stay Moya, Vayumusu gam shneihem Machlon veKilyon. Machlon and Kilyon, they both died. Both sons died. And then it says, "Vatishoy ho isha mishnei ilodeo." That ho isha, the woman meaning Nomi, she remains mishnei ilodeo ume isha. She remains. She has no more shnei ilodeo, her two sons ume isha, meaning from her husband. She had lost her husband and her two sons. Now, grammatically, it's a very strange pasuk if we think about this, because it says vayumusu gam shnei machlon vekilyon. It just says earlier that Elimelech had died. And then it says that the two sons died. And here again, and then it says, Vati Sho'ero Isha, the woman remains, Mishnei Lodea, meaning without her two sons, Ume Isha, and from her husband. Sounds like a repetition. There's absolutely no need for us to say that if she loses her two sons, that she is without her two sons. There's no point in us telling her if she lost her husband, that she is without her husband. So what is the meaning in this? Vati Sho'ero Isha, and the woman remained, Mishnei Lodea Ume Isha. Sounds like a very strange and bizarre way of putting the puzzle. So I saw in a sefer called Mishpat Zayzav, which gives us really something to think about. And he explains that the word ho'isha, normally we know that ish, ein ish elo loshen chashivus. That ish always means that somebody has a certain chashivus and importance. The same would also apply to ho'isha, to a woman as well. So we would have perhaps thought that naturally, when a woman loses, all the matters and elements that would normally have some value to a person, she lost her spouse, she lost her husband, she lost all her money, she lost all her sons, she lost pretty much everything that a person can lose. And we would normally think that if a person is in that such a situation, she loses everything and she had lost, and there's nothing left of her. However, we learn over here a little bit about Nomi. We learn that Nomi, Vatishoheo Isha, meaning she remained with the same chashivus. She had everything to her still, because she was not, her value was not in her wealth, her value was not in her financial standing, her value was not even with her spouse, her value was not because of her children, her value was much more intrinsic. It was where she was, who she was, her Yirat Shemayim, her persona, who she was in closeness to avoid this Hashem and to mitzvahs, and therefore she remained Vatishoeho Isha. She remained despite the fact that she lost everything around her that normally would consider of value. And I think this is really important, because when we think about it, we tend to judge ourselves also in terms of where we are, what we do, and who our family are, who our yichus is, what we do, and we're learning over here about Tishoya Isha, the chashivas of her being who she really was, because that's really ultimately what counts the most. This is something that we learn from Nomi. Perhaps another important message that we learn, not from Elimelech and not from Nomi, but we learn something from Orpah. But before proceeding with Orpah, just something that triggered my mind with regards to Vatishoy HaIsha. There's a story that I saw by Rebbe Ahn Leib Steinman. I think it's one of those stories that I think is so, we can learn so much from this. Rebbe Ahn Leib Steinman, Zeichet Tzadik V'Kodesh Livracha. He was once approached by the Gaboim, and he was told that, there's a very important man over here from Tel Aviv, from the high-tech society in Tel Aviv. Extremely wealthy, politically very active. I don't know his name, but I know that he was a very important man. And the Baal Leib was approached, he wants to come and visit you. The Baal Leib said, okay. This little flat in Bnei Brak, where there was nothing but Sforim, and if he wants to come, with pleasure. So this person insisted that he came to the Baal Leib. And this is what happened. The Gaboim ushered this person in, who was very powerful, extremely wealthy, and a man of tremendous money and importance. And he was ushered into Rebbe Ahn Leib. Rebbe Ahn Leib gets this person sitting next to him. And when they the Gaboim tell Rebbe Ahn Leib, this is this and this fellow, and he's come over here just to get a bracha. So doesn't really keep much. So Rebbe Ahn Leib looks at him and he says, "Do you keep Shabbos?" And everybody's cringing. Because, of course, the answer is no, he didn't keep Shabbos. And this is very uncomfortable and a very
and a very a bit sticky. You know, Rav Leib asked, this person came all the way. He wants to have that meeting with Rav Leib. And the first thing, Rav Leib looks up and asks, do you keep Shabbos? And so the person answers truthfully and honestly. He answers, he says, no, I don't keep Shabbos. So Rav Leib looks down at him and says, I can't give you bracha because Shabbos is mekor kol habrachos. Shabbos, you know, if you keep Shabbos, Hashem is going to bench you. But I'm not prepared. I can't give you bracha. And with this, he ignores him, and everybody was cringing. This is so embarrassing, so embarrassing. You have got this very high tech, very wealthy and very powerful man comes into Rav Leib, and he can't get to that embarrassing kind of meeting. And Rav Leib says, I can't give you a bracha and everything. And this is all like very. Not very comfortable, and he walks out, and they didn't know how to kind of cover this up and how to sort this out. How can we iron this out? And he walks out, and here's what he says. He says, this was an amazing experience for me, he says. This is something which I've never experienced in my life, because always people give me such covert, people give me such respect, either because of the money which I have, or because of the political power that I have, or because of the influence that I can have. But this is the first time that actually somebody truly and honestly respected me. He really wanted the good of me. Now, Rav, he appreciated, he understood, and he acknowledged that the reason why Rav Leib told him that he can't give him a bracha on his Shabbos, give him a bracha, Shabbos mekol habrachos, was because he truly cared for him. He understood that, he acknowledged that, he understood that. And therefore, he didn't take it badly. On the contrary, he said, it's the first time in my life somebody's not mechabed my money, somebody's not mechabed my power, somebody's not mechabed my influence, somebody's actually mechabed me. And with that, he took this in a very positive, because this is what the Rav Leib really saw, and he was tremendously inspired by this meeting with the Rav Leib. But he saw how he shot. Pardon? The story where I saw it doesn't actually, I had the same question, it doesn't actually continue with that second bit that we're all very curious. I don't know. Yeah. Pardon? Wouldn't be perhaps, yeah. Yeah. The third message, after learning something from Elimelech, learning something from Nomi, we can now learn something from Orpah, I believe, which is the following. We find that both Orpah and Rus, they stay with Nomi as long as they can. And the pasuk tells us they go together, Loshuv, to return El Eretz Yehuda, to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Nomi then goes and says to both daughters-in-law, Lechno, go back, Shoivno, Isha Leveis Imo, go back to your mother's home. Yas Hashem imochem chesed, you know, you've been very kind. Hashem is for sure going to reward you. He's going to give you kindness. Asisim kasher, asisim amesim veimodi, like you've been kind to me. Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to repay you. Yitin Hashem lochem otzono menucha. And the post then continues. Vatishak, vatishak lohen, vatiseinu kolna, vatifkeno. The daughters-in-law, they insist, vatimano lo ki itoch noshuv leamech, we want to stay with you. And Nomi then discourages them. Why are you staying with me? And the conversation kind of continues like this until at one point. Cries, Vatishak, and she gives a kiss to her mother-in-law, and Rus remains with her. And here is really the point. We find Rus versus Orpah, and it's really fascinating. Because we've got both coming from the identical background. We know that Rus and Orpah, Gemara tells us they were sisters. Not only sisters-in-law, but they were sisters. They both met Machlon and Kilyon. We don't find substantial, significant differences between Machlon and Kilyon. They're married, two sisters, married to two brothers. The background is the same. They both come from they're both princesses of Melech Moav. They're married to same kind of people. The background is identical. The life experiences are identical. They've got the same experience as they move forward with Nomi. And yet, when it comes to a crucial point, Rus makes her decision and Orpah makes her decision. Orpah turns back
And the Gemara tells us already on the way home, she made all the chatoim possible, and there was nothing left of her. But she remains being her history is, her legacy is being a great grandmother of Golias HaPlishti. Rus, however, Rus Dovkoba, what happens to Rus is she becomes the eternal grandmother and the matriarch of the monarchy of Malchus based David. She remains and she stays in the fold of Klal Yisrael, and she makes that ultimate step into royalty of Klal Yisrael. And it's amazing if we think about this for a minute, because the background is the same, the experiences are the same, what they're doing is the same, and everything leading towards it is the same, but it comes to one point, and then Rus makes her decision, and Orpah makes her decision, and the outcome is completely, completely the opposite. Which seems to teach us and seems to indicate that it's not about where we come from. It's not the societies, our background, where we hang around, who we are married to, what we do, where we live. It's all non-important. The ultimate difference between Rus and Orpah, which are the legacies are opposite, is about the decision that they took at one specific moment. It's about what a person decides at one specific moment. Where am I going? What am I doing? And you see the ultimate difference, the opposing differences that are the outcome from here. What really counts is not where one comes from, but where one goes to, and what ultimately it's decisions, little decisions that can make such a huge difference, which we find also in Rashi. Because Rashi tells us, the pasuk tells us just a bit later, Vayelchu Shneem, and Vayelchu Shneem, just the next pasuk, Vayelchu Gam Shneem. Look how precious Chavivim are in front of the Rebbeinu Shloim. Given she not died to his Gaia, since she decided to become a Gioris, Hish for Oysev Akosov Renome, they are compared Hish for Akosov. And Asur Biak Kamenetsky and others ask, that what's mean Hish for Akosov? How can it be Hish for Akosov? You've got Nomi, you lived the life of mysterious Nefesh for years. She lived the life of Torah, of Mitzvahs. And yet you've got Rus, who just about decided to become a Gioris. Just decided to become a Gioris. Hishvah Kosov, they're on equal standing. How could you be on equal footing? This is years of Torah mitzvahs, and it's just a split second of a decision. How can I be equal, Hishvah Kosov? The answer is because it doesn't. We don't judge people by the amount of mitzvahs they do, and what kind of. There's no account of building up of mitzvahs, but what counts really is the decision that a person makes, and the years of mitzvahs that she made and that she did and where she got to is Hishva Kosov, is parallel to just the decision in a split second that Rus made. The next and final Dvar Torah I want to share is a beautiful Chasam Sofer, in Drosh's Chasam Sofer, something that we find at the end of the Perek, when at the end of the page, we find Vatoshav Nomi Verusa Mayav Vikalosa Imo, Hashovam Isdei Mayav, Vehemu Bo Beislechem Betchilas Ktsir Seoirim. At the end of the page, we find that they get back to Eretz Yisrael, Nomi and Rus, and the struggle are still very difficult. And then he repeats the pasuk Vatoshav Nomi Verusa Mayav. He repeats it. Yes, they return from Sdei Mayav, and here they are Betchilas Ktsir Seoirim. Here they are. Now this sounds completely superfluous. What is he teaching us? That they just got there, and yes, they are here now after returning from Sdei Mayav. This pasuk seems completely and utterly superfluous. What is he giving us? What is this pasuk teaching us? That they have just returned now. We know they have returned. We know they made their way to Sdei Mayav, and we know they are back now. What is this pasuk, the final pasuk in the first page, giving us? V'atoshav no mevrusam of the return. What is he giving us? Drosh Chasam Sofer explains as follows. Haile Chasam Sofer tells us that when they returned, what was going through their minds? And he says that you've got Nomi here returning after having lost her husband, her children, her wealth, everything, everything. And she returns now, with the back of her mind, she's returning from Stemoyov to Eretz Yisrael with one thing. She says she has got a distant relative called Boaz. And that distant relative, he's got money, and he's got power, and he's got influence. And I want to get, perhaps he'll be able to help us out, because I'm moro, I'm without anything. I have no money, I have no connection, I have nothing besides that little string of rope that she had. And I've got, perhaps he'll be able to help us out. To me and my daughter-in-law, perhaps there's a bit of hope there. That was the only string of hope that she had, was getting something from Boaz. However, she wouldn't feel comfortable to approach Boaz directly. The only way she can approach him is by approaching Boaz's wife. It's distant relatives, Vinishtvi, and there's no direct connection. She in the back of her mind, she's going to go back, and she's going to ask Boaz's wife, perhaps she can help us out a little bit. What happens? As soon as she returns back, she notices a big tumult and a big matzev. What is the big matzev?
His wife died.
It's the levaya of his wife. As soon as he sees that, he says, she sees that, and she sees that the big levaya. Chassam Sof explains to us, she goes completely, that's the last string of hope. That's all she has. That Boaz's wife was the only way. Wine Pozik Chov Base.
That
Midrashim tells us. That's what happened then. It's Midrashim. Because that's what she sees, the big situation there. And what happened was the Levaya of Boaz's wife. She realizes the last string of hope that she had. The last string of hope that she had was to get something through Boaz's wife, to get something from Boaz. She's unable to directly approach Boaz, unable to do that. She doesn't feel comfortable enough to do that. And therefore she realizes there's no hope. The last string of hope which I had, even that's gone. And she is devastated. She feels that nothing worse can happen. That's the last that I could have... The last. But in reality, what happened was, of course, we all know, there was a beginning of the Yeshua was taking place at that very moment. Because the fact that Boaz's wife was Nifta enabled Rus to marry her, and it was really the seeds of Yeshua were planted right there and then. So she thought there was absolutely no hope, and she thought, this is it, I have nothing left. But the reality was HaKadosh Baruch Hu was just planting then the Yeshua, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has just prepared then for the big Yeshua to happen. Everything was going to go uphill from that very moment. How a person sometimes has got the right understanding of what goes on around him. He feels it's Midas Adin, whilst in reality, it's Midas Rachamim. And it's exactly what's taking place over here. To finish off with this story about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky himself said this story. And it's something which I also believe is something to think about. We've got Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky when I was young. He was learning in Köln, Kochen Köln. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was also finding it very difficult to financially support his wife and his young family. And it was very difficult for him. And at one point there was a shtele in Vilkomir that became available. Vilkomir, which was a community, and the Rav had retired and he was available. He really applied for that job. He wanted to become the Rav in Vilkomir. He went there for Shabbos, where he gave a shir, and he spent some time in the community there. And he felt, as far as he was concerned, it went really well. He went really well. And the shiurim and the kind of connection to the community and the kehillah, everything went really well. And he was very satisfied the way it went. And he was sure that he was going to be offered that position to be Rav in Vilkomir. And for him, there was a very important step in his life, because the kehillah money wasn't enough. And he just had to go out and teach Torah and he felt this was just the best. This was the best opportunity. He was devastated when he gets a telegram a few weeks later that, unfortunately, the position of Vilkomir has been offered to somebody else, and he's not going to be the Rav of Vilkomir. He was absolutely devastated. He thought it was such a perfect match. He'll be just the right person to be able to take that position in Vilkomir. He thought it was the right person, the right place, at the right time, but he wasn't. He was unable to continue in Köln, and he said, I can't support myself like this. I can't. I don't have the money. I can't. And eventually he had to look elsewhere. He was really upset. He didn't understand why is this happening. He felt this was just right. I'm the right person for this killer. And the killer is just right for me. And he felt this was... But it wasn't to happen. And he was very upset. And he didn't understand what was going on. And he couldn't support himself. He couldn't financially hold it back.
and he couldn't stay in the kol. Eventually looked further afield, and eventually a position was, he heard some low-key position was available in Canada, which because of the lack of alternatives and the lack of options, he decided, okay, I'm going to go there. And he did that. He was very upset, not what he wanted to do. He found it was a very difficult decision for him, but he had absolutely no alternative and no choice. Therefore, Rav Kamenetsky packs his bag, he leaves Europe, and he goes off to him it was Midas Adin. To him, this was really a difficult decision to make, and it was very hard on him, it was Midas Adin. But in reality, there was no great chesed, because what happened to Vilkomir just a few years later was the community of Vilkomir was completely, completely wiped out by the Nazis, including the Rav. Everybody was wiped out and everybody was killed by the Nazis in Yimach Shemam. There was absolutely nobody left of Vilkomir. Now this, of course, Yibyak Kamenetsky took him, he said, B'shas Maisa, I felt this was Midas Adin, but there was no greatest Midas Rachmim in that. You know, sometimes with job situation, we look at it, we don't understand the depth and the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu judging, and we sometimes have the wrong end of the stick because we don't see the entire episode, the entire story. And this is exactly what happened here as well with those Anomi. They felt this is the end of it, but in reality the plants, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu had planted the seeds of Yeshua right at that moment, and this is indeed something to think about. So we're learning over here four messages in Megillah Source. One we learn from Elimelech, who knows who is supporting whom. Melech thought he was supporting the Yidden around him, but it wasn't the case. On the contrary, he was being supported by the Yidden whom he was contributing to. The second message we learned from Nomi, that Chashivus is Batishoy Ho'isha. The Chashivus is not according to things around, but the Chashivus of a person is intrinsic. Batishoy Ho'isha, she remains Ho'isha. Then we learned one message from Orpah, the importance of being a Makabal. They both Rus and Orpah were in the same situation at the beginning, but she accepted Torah and she didn't. It doesn't matter what the society around it is, it's all about where a person, how much a Makabal a person is. Finally, we learned from Dosh Chasam Sofer taught us that while something looked at the end of the last string of hope, what really was a great issue was taking place at that very moment. So these are perhaps four messages we see, four eternal messages we indeed see in Megillah Sos. I wish you a very good day and a very good Yom Tov.
Shkoyach, thank you very much.
Shkoyach.